times that try men's souls, the summer soldier and the sunshine patriot, in this crisis, shrink from the service of his country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of men and women. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. Thomas Paine. This is episode 64, The Crisis. When we last left off, Bennett Arnold's navy is done. The British go into winter quarters up in the north. So now we're bringing it back to Washington's army. Washington, after having a really tough campaign season in the late summer of 1776, is then chased clear across New Jersey back to the Pennsylvania side of the Delaware River. In the north, the ports of Newport, New York, have both fallen to the British. The largest city in colonial America, which is Philadelphia, was the target of Howe's army. If he could take the rebel capital, then maybe he can force an end to the conflict. The Howe brothers still want to seek peace. Yes, they are military commanders, but their prime focus was restoring the relationship between the crown and her colonies. If they could do that with minimal fighting, they were going to try. Their stance on this idea of let's talk and try and figure this out without firing bullets at each other gave them the support of New Jersey. Since the beginning of the war, since we started this podcast, I had mentioned that when we started talking about Continental Congress and members that were keen on the idea of starting a fight with the British and declaring independence, New Jersey was always one of those few that were soft on the idea. They didn't want to go to war with the British, and if they could find a way out of it, they were going to. And so having the Howe brothers say, hey, let's try and talk without a fight, well, many people in the Jersey colony will flock and take the oath of allegiance to the crown. Washington, of course, is disgusted by this. He says in one of his letters, the conduct of the Jerseys has been most infamous. Instead of turning out to defend the country and affording aid to our army, they make their submissions as fast as they can. And Jersey wasn't the only place this was happening. Many prominent patriots are becoming discouraged. Now, there are a few, even a couple of members from the First Continental Congress will turn and say, you know what, Britain's going to win anyway, and they will actually march off to the British camp and take the Oath of Allegiance and side with the British. They're traitors. I'll say that straight out. But there are many prominent patriots that were very much in favor of the patriot cause. They believed in it. They wanted to see it fulfilled. But they had to consider what they were risking to their own families and to their own persons by staying this course. Things have not been going well for Washington's army. And, I mean, things aren't going super fantastic up north. I mean, it's a little bit better, but still, nothing that is worthy of writing home about. In my home state of Delaware, we have statues, schools named after John Dickinson. He's probably one of the most well-known patriots in the state. However, his resolve is shaken. It was shaken so bad that he actually turns down an appointment to the Delaware delegation in January of 1777. Now, is John Dickinson a traitor? Absolutely not. He's a man, like all men, feels fear. So I wouldn't even say he's disloyal to the patriot cause, but he really sits back and think, what am I risking by continuing this course? And so abstaining from a delegation in 1777 is not the end of the world, and he comes around towards the, you know, midpoint in the war and will rejoin the public eye, but it's just something that even the most staunch patriots are shaken by how poorly the Continental Army has performed so far, how poorly Washington has performed so far, how bad things are going in the North. There are very few victories on the American side right now. Most of the major conflicts are going to the British. There is those steadfast, though, that aren't shaken. And there is one man who, once again, puts down the musket and picks up the pen. Thomas Paine, the author of Common Sense, writes Common Sense. It draws a lot of people into the Patriot cause, into the Continental Army, into the cause of freedom. He himself will pick up the musket. But in the early winter of 1776, he puts the musket down, picks up the pen, and will write The Crisis. And that was the quote I read at the top of the podcast. It came from Thomas Paine's writing. And this book flew through the camps. Men wanted to prove themselves diehard patriots. They wanted to prove themselves the steadfast, not summertime patriots that are just going to go home and say, oh, we tried, but we failed. No, they wanted freedom. They could taste it. They just needed to find a way to prove that. And Thomas Paine's writing illustrates those feelings, and really, it really gives the men something to fight for, in a sense. Once again, he's written something down that has shown these average men, these farmers, that they can do anything as long as they have the belief in themselves and the belief in the cause to do it. Now, Philadelphia, on the other hand, had to prepare for a possible attack from the British. And unfortunately, no book is going to protect them from the British army if they come down. So the Continental Congress will move. They actually move to Baltimore. All the stores that are held in the city are moved to York, Pennsylvania. On December 13th, two things will happen that will both raise and deplete Washington's hope. Now, how do you raise his hope and then destroy it? Well, with a great deal of difficulty, I will tell you that. The first was the news that Howe was going to go into winter quarters. He was going to march his men back to New York, leaving only outposts in New Jersey. Howe wanted to make sure that the outposts could protect the outlying areas, but he had no interest in going chasing Washington around some more because, one, he thought that winter was going to be – it was going to be a bit of a harsh winter, and it was. He didn't want to go marching across the river where the river could freeze, supply lines could become a problem. He didn't want to move too far away from his supply base in New York City. So he decides that he's going to move the army back to New York, leaving only about 3,000 men and various outposts across the greater New Jersey area. And the next episode we'll talk more in depth about these outposts. He clearly states in a letter that there's going to be no attempt to cross the Delaware River. Now the second thing, that news is fantastic for Washington. Oh, I get a break. He's still prepared, just in case it's some sort of feint, some sort of lie from Howe. But he has hope. And then it's completely taken away because he then gets a letter that Charles Lee is captured. Now, Lee had 2,000 men under his command. And after New York, he was taking his sweet time moving south. If you think back to the White Plains episode, we talked about how Washington moved south and was heading back through Jersey with Cornwallis hot on his heels. Lee was sent to a different position to guard against a possible movement by Howe, also moving south into New Jersey. And Lee was hanging around in the upstate New York area for a little while. And he would take his sweet time moving through New Jersey because, well, Howe wasn't chasing. So Lee just took his time. See, Lee was not a huge fan of what was going on. He thinks that he, a ex-British officer, was much more equipped to handle this army and to lead them against the British. And so he is going to actively work to bring down Washington in the eyes of Congress. He's going to work to elevate himself and make himself look great while proving to Congress, quote unquote, that Washington is not worthy of the position of commander of the Continental Forces. So Lee is in no rush to join up with Washington. And on the night of the 12th, he actually leaves his army to go to a tavern and enjoy the company of a woman. Well, the next morning, he would find himself surrounded by British dragoons. William Harcourt, at the head of 30 horsemen, was under orders from Lord Cornwallis to find Lee's army. He knew that Lee was moving through the countryside, and he knew that if he could take out those 2,000 men, that is 2,000 less soldiers that could go and join Washington. Well, they don't find Lee's army, but they do find Lee. And Lee's captured. Just like that. How simple. Washington only had a few thousand men. And when he gets the news that Lee is captured, he's like, oh, great. So now I'm short 2,000 men. So he's left with about 3,000. Until he gets word that Sullivan, the second in command under Lee, is marching his direction. He would actually get to Washington around the 20th, about a week later. He's bringing with him his 2,000 men. Washington numbers were boosted to 6,000 men. The 3,000 that were with Washington, the 1,000 reinforcement troops from Philadelphia, plus Sullivan's 2,000 men. There you go, your 6,000 men. And that's what's fit for duty. Remember, a lot of men, there was a lot more men in Washington's army, but most of them were sick or invalids that weren't able to fight. So that was something that Washington will have to wrestle with for pretty much the entire time of the war. So he has 6,000 men, splits them into three corps so that they could guard every possible ferry crossing over the Delaware. The brigades of General Sterling, Mercer, Stephen, and Rochefort-Fromoy, when you put those three commands together, was about 2,000 men, would guard all the crossings from Yardley to Coryell's Ferry. General Ewing, with about 550 men, would guard all the ferry crossings from Yardley to Bordentown. Cadwalder, and about 1,800 men, would continue the line from Bordentown all the way to Dunk's Ferry. There were a total of 9 ferry crossings, and every one of them had an earthwork and some cannon and a garrison to protect them. The garrison troops would build themselves some crude huts due to the lack of tents in the army, and they were preparing to settle down for winter quarters. Or at least that's what they thought. Because when we come back next time, we're going to talk about this bold strategy that George Washington pulls off. Remember, he hasn't had a victory at all. He went through August, September, October, November, was getting beat and chased around or forced to retreat from every field of battle that he was at. And though some of the battles were very bloody for the British, some of them were just embarrassing for Washington too. So he takes up, or wrestles with the idea of, what if I cross the river and stick it to the British Army? They're in winter quarters. They're not planning anything. They just want to make sure that we don't cross the river. That's all they care about. So as long as we're not crossing the river, they'll leave us alone. So how about we stick it to them by crossing the river and bringing the fight to them? Now, not that that was a direct quote, but it's pretty close to what Washington was probably thinking. And that's what we're going to talk about next time. We're going to talk about Washington's crossing and the Battle of Trenton and how this was the first major victory for Washington and why it was one of the most important for his army. Until next time, everyone have a great weekend. I will hopefully be able to get the new episode out next a new episode out next week, because I've already started the writing on it, so that'll be good. You know, the schedule's tough, and I do appreciate everyone that is a faithful, loyal listener. I try and do an episode every week, but it's becoming more like every 2 weeks, and I get them out when I can. So those who are loyal listeners, thank you. And if, once again, I'm going to have to beg, it's the holiday season, it's the time for begging, I would really appreciate it if you guys could just, as a Christmas present, go onto iTunes if you have that capability and just give a 5-star review on iTunes. It really helps boost the podcast. I know I got a lot of listeners that are starting to come in because I keep getting all these likes and all these people that are adding the podcast Facebook page or joining the group. So I really thank everyone who's doing that. But if we could just take it one step farther and get some love on iTunes, that would be fantastic. So thank you. I really do appreciate everyone who listens. Sorry for the bit of an ad hoc episode this week, but I just wanted to set the stage for Trenton. Next week, we're going to get right on into the fight, and we're going to talk about Trenton and Washington's first major victory. Till next time, everyone have a great weekend, and remember, keep the powder dry.